You're listening to the High Spot Podcast presented by Brain Stew Radio. Brain Stew Radio is brought to you by Brain Stew Media. Check out studio rates, online mixing deals, and live sound recording by going to brainstewmedia.com. Brain Stew Radio graphics are designed by Skunk Duck Designs. For all of your graphic art needs, Skunk Duck, no one does it better. Brain Stew Radio is happy to be affiliated with Pro Wrestling Magic. Don't rely on superstars to deliver your high-quality independent pro wrestling. Check out their upcoming schedule at WrestlingIsMagic.com.
Coming down the aisle at a combined weight of 436 pounds, the team of Jeffrey Martin, Brian Berga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
And that intro can only mean one thing. You're listening to the High Spot Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. This is Jeff Martin alongside my tag team partner, one half of the Jersey Wrecking Crew and the trendsetter, Mr. Brian Berga. How are you today, buddy?
Well, it's an honor for you to have me here, Jeff. And we got to find a nickname for you, buddy. We really do, because it's not the same. I am the trendsetter.
Yeah, I got to find one, man.
Thank you, Tiffany Oshansky, really... for that. But again, it has to be given to you. You can't come up with one yourself.
You got to earn one, though, right?
Earn one? You know, who knows? Maybe as the weeks go by, we'll figure out one for you. Maybe that could be actually, guys, if you have a nickname you like Jeff Martin to have, hit us up on Twitter, because the High Spot Podcast is on Twitter. Moving to iTunes pretty soon. But catch us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast, as well as Brain Stew Radio Network, and catch them as well at Brain Stew Radio. And we got to come up with a nickname for you.
So I know.
What better
know.
Than... The High Spot Podcast fans to give you that nickname.
So we're going
to
call them High Spot Nation? Is that what we're going to call our fans?
High Spot Nation? Nah, sounds...
We got to think of something else. Copy.
That's what we have to think of. But again, for those of you listening, you want to give Jeff Martin a nickname because he can't think of one of himself, and I really can't think of one
well,
for him right
Tiffany
now.
Tiffany gave you the nickname.
Again,
so,
she gave it to me, yes.
So I haven't found a guest there that's wants to give me a nickname. But hey, how about a shout-out? Happy birthday to Mr. Chris Hamill, the founder of Brain Stew Radio, 30 years old. We love you, Chris. This show's for you.
Yes. You're only a year younger now, in your 30s, but hey, and he's in the prime of his life. We're in the prime of our careers, so what better time to share it than with Chris Hamill. I hope he has a happy B-Day, he enjoys it with the friends and fam, and we're going to be celebrating later on with Chris Hamill at a designated location later on.
You know what this means, though,
we'll make
Brian?
It up.
You know what this means? It means 364 days till 31, if you want to think about it that way.
Jeez, you really just can't get off the fact when people hit 30. I mean, hey, it's just a number,
yeah,
Jeff.
Yeah, well,
I've hit
that, you know, a long time ago. So, yeah. It goes all downhill after 25. So, just want to just drink a lot of drinks and just wait for the day to pass by. And
before you know it, you'll forget about the
day. Nothing to look forward to now.
Well, we have something to look forward to, too.
How about this, Brian? How about our buddy Pete Wolfinger? We had him on last week,
and
he's taking a hiatus from Facebook because he just can't. He wants to lash out on these people after the debate, and it's really funny. And I said, "No, hurry back, Pete. We need to have more of your funny posts." So hopefully, if you want to hear from Pete Wolfinger, go back to the previous show where we had him on and some great stuff before he went on hiatus. So that's just interesting. I just saw it, too. I was reading it, too. He's taking a break.
I can't imagine that break lasting any longer than a couple of days. You know, he's always active on social media. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe it's a break for him, theoretically, not for us. So, hey, if it works for him, hey, we miss you already, Pete. We hope you come back pretty soon. So we loved him on the show and can't wait to have him again pretty soon, too. And then talking about the presidential debate, it finally happened. And we're nowhere closer to people coming up with a decision of who they want as a president.
Of course, you know, one side, the side that roots for one is going to say that they won, and the other side is going to say that they won. So again, nothing's decided. We have two more of these. But also, we got a great guest for you today, Brian Fritz from Between the Ropes Wrestling Podcast, and also a contributor to the Sporting News with his wrestling articles, and also a guy that you'll find out goes to a lot of NXT tapings.
Yeah.
A guy that you see around all the time. You know the name. If you can't put a face to it, you will check him out on YouTube, and has his own podcast that are available on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify. Just really, really knowledgeable about wrestling. So we're very happy to have him on the show this week as our guest.
Oh, it'd be a blast to talk to him about Clash of Champions.
Yeah, and Clash of Champions, of course, happened, and you know, the expectations were high. I don't know how you want to rate it, Brian, but I would say it kind of teetered on good, but honestly, it was just an okay show, if you ask me.
I say it served its purpose because it was supposed to be the individual pay-per-view for Raw, but as we will talk with Brian about it, for me, it didn't really live up to expectations. But again, expectations were set so high because of Backlash, so either you're going to match that or hit a home run, or you're just basically going to fall flat on your face. In my opinion, Clash of Champions, Raw's first individual pay-per-view from this brand split, you know, besides the main event where great matches, I think the overall product, although it was a good show, kind of fell flat on its face.
Yeah, you know, so we're going to get to that with Brian Fritz too, so we're going to talk about that. But I want to get your take on the main event. We'll focus on the main event between Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins. Of course, ended in controversial fashion, as only a heel can ever come out winning that matchup, and Kevin Owens comes out winning because the referee came down, Stephanie McMahon sent him over, and he gets to he's able to get the distraction and get the pop-up powerbomb to beat Seth Rollins. What do you think here? You think there's going to be more friction between Foley and Steph, and do you think that Stephanie's in cahoots with Triple H? I mean, we saw the video afterwards.
Yeah.
She got in limo with her husband. You got to think at some point, they're like, hey, honey, tell me why you picked Kevin Owens?
You know, it's still a phrase from Peter Griffin and Family Guy. You know what really grinds my gears, Jeff? The mere fact that we're actually talking about this. It's such a disservice to me, in my opinion, honestly, Jeff, that we have to be talking about, again, once again, the dynamic between Stephanie and Triple H and Mick Foley and this whole, like, again, we talk about triple threat matches, how much we hate them. This literally, this triangle of Mick Foley, Stephanie, and now Triple H, who's come back on TV, who cost Seth Rollins the Universal Championship several Raws prior to Clash of Champions. And now we're talking about this. We should have been talking about the main event. Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins going out there and tearing the house down and literally destroying themselves in the process, which Seth Rollins seems to be dealing with some bruised ribs after that match with Kevin Owens. That's what I think we should be focusing on. The mere fact that we're talking about this storyline as opposed to the actual title itself, to me, is an insult to those two guys. So I will have none of it. None of it. What's going to happen? I don't know. As the weeks go by, we'll find out. But right now, I am sick and tired of the whole Mick Foley. And it seems like every week, Mick Foley is screaming and yelling about something. He's pointing the finger. And he's with his gigantic
and he gets
beard,
humbled at
gets
the end.
Humbled and screams. And then Stephanie finally shows her true colors and puts Mick Foley in his place.
Isn't it funny the last month or so? The last 2 months or so, have you missed Stephanie McMahon? I mean, this whole being nice and you know, placating to the crowd really was not her. And you're starting to finally see her maybe turn to, you know, her true colors. And again, you know,
I think we've seen enough of Stephanie. I mean, look at SmackDown, for example. We see Daniel Bryan. We don't see Shane McMahon that often.
No.
Every once in a while, he comes in, waves his hand, says hello to the crowd, says, what up, whatever town he's in, and that's it. We don't really see so much altercation. Yeah. Stephanie, they can't get away from her being on the camera.
It's all centered around the commissioner and general manager relationship.
Yeah.
And on
Which
the other side,
be.
On SmackDown, you know, Daniel Bryan is allowed to make his moves. Yes, he'll have to text Shane on occasion, but you don't see that friction between both of them. And I think it should be centered around the talent.
But it's more than just the friction, Jeff. It's not about them.
Exactly.
That's the thing. It's not about. It's about the stories and the rivalries that are on the show. It's about the titles. It's about the personal rivalries on the show for SmackDown Live. For Raw, it's all about the McMahons. It's all about Triple H. It's all about Mick Foley. It's just a way to massage their humongous egos. And the product suffers for it because then we just see matches and we have no idea what they're based on.
Now, I remember Brian said humongous egos. I, you know, kind of have respect for Triple H, Stephanie McMahon, Mick Foley. But obviously, you can tell that right now.
Thanks for singling me out, Jeff. Really appreciate
it. And that's
it.
Brian Berga, High Spot Podcast. He is a trendsetter on Twitter.
Yeah, hit me
Bri
up at Bryberga.
Yeah, exactly.
See,
so
let me know what your comments are there.
Yeah. So the way they're leaning towards Mick Foley, do you think right now they're making him kind of look foolish? Because last Monday, when you saw that and Stephanie McMahon humbled him, because he came fired up. Oh my God, I just sounded like, I don't know. It didn't sound myself, but he came in fired up.
Okay.
And you're going to save that. And he came in fired up and really looking to attack Stephanie and say, you lied to me. You know, you did this and that. And the second man, Stephanie man fired back by saying, you know what, do
your
job.
Wrestling terminologies here. Yeah. Fire up in the corner, brother. Fire up.
Do your job and stop thinking of these wrestlers and, you know, as talent and caring for them and do your job. Think of them as assets and talent that they truly are. So, do you think that Mick Foley is on the verge of really, kind of his real role as a GM is being questioned now, and it's he's looking foolish?
Well, it could be fair to say, Jeff, that he was foolish for even deciding to do the job. We all know who's running it. As much as initially it was first thought out from whoever creative was that thought about this out and then Vince approved it, the mere idea was that, listen, Shane and Stephanie are going to be competing against each other. But these so-called people in charge who's running everything, like which is Mick Foley and Daniel Bryan, have complete authority. That's not the case on Raw. We know who's running it. We know who's making the decisions. We know who's pulling the strings and manipulating. It's Stephanie McMahon. Rightfully so. So Mick Foley is just foolish for the fact that he actually took the position. And from there, it's just been kind of been stabbed in the back and been made to look the fool the entire time. So he's not the fool now. He's been fool the entire time he's been commissioner or general manager, whichever one he is.
I think now we've finally come to the conclusion that it is the general manager. We had a little bit of debate. Have they ever distinguished commissioner, general manager? So now I think we know now that Mick Foley is the general manager instead.
No, but what I mean by that is Stephanie is the commissioner and general manager.
Yeah.
And Foley wants to be both as well. And it's this power struggle, which again gets back to the point, Jeff. It's all about that. Those are the main stories. How many times do we see Raw and it opens up with Mick Foley or Stephanie in the ring? We don't need that anymore. Now, in the last one started with Roman Reigns defending the United States title. I get it. It's a little different.
It really was different. You had...
But the norm is that, though.
Yeah, no. You would have that angle. It happened backstage. But what about Rusev and Roman Reigns opening up Raw for like 30-plus minutes for the U.S. title, which ended in a double countout?
You know what? At the end of that time, you know, despite what my feelings are obviously of Roman Reigns as a talent terms on the microphone and being pushed up as a main roster type of guy, he can go in the ring. And him and Rusev, I thought, had a really good match. And for the first time, I was actually like, hey, they're going 30 minutes. We're no longer doing 25-minute segments in the ring before the show starts where we see a match. So I was perfectly happy with it. And at the same time, too, Rusev being somebody that I wouldn't say you want to protect, but a very viable asset because I don't think this rivalry is over by any means. What perfect way to end it than a double countout? Fans might gripe because they want a winner and loser, but at the same time, you're actually, believe it or not, storyline-wise, setting this up for another pay-per-view, which they're going to have, for the title. So it makes perfect sense, and I was happy with it, believe it or not.
And give credit to the guys because they wrestled the night before, you know, and then in Indiana, then they got to drive and head to Cincinnati. And then have another 30-minute match. I mean, you don't. That's what I thought about. That's the first thing I thought about when I saw these guys going at it for 30-plus minutes. I mean, man, these guys just went in a tough match the night before. And now they're going at it again. Again, mad props to these guys, first and foremost.
That goes back to the times that you and I enjoyed the most. You would see that every single Raw. After a huge pay-per-view, Raw's War came on, and we had another 25-minute match from either Shawn Michaels or The Rock or Triple H or Stone Cold. That was our norm back in that time. So yeah, it was great to see that.
So a lot of credit goes out to these guys. And with Brian Fritz, we will talk about Clash of Champions. We'll talk about the women's title match. We'll talk about the tag team championship match between the New Day and Gallows and Anderson. You know, we'll dissect that and we'll talk about my feelings on Gallows and Anderson. So, but John Cena, Dean Ambrose, AJ Styles.
Another triple threat match, yeah.
Of course, at No Mercy. But Dean Ambrose had a chance to, you know, take the title back from AJ Styles in a very good match. Ended with AJ Styles getting the roll-up win, grabbing the jeans, but coming off, you know, the victor. But again,
at least he wasn't kicking the crotch this time.
Exactly. He's working his way, you know, down. And
I wouldn't say that.
Well, now you know what I mean.
Yeah,
he's,
okay.
You dirty mind, man. Just
hey, you said it, not me.
Look where you're taking the show.
Okay, whatever.
Has the show come down to this now?
Apparently so.
So your take on this. So John Cena gets the upper hand, you know, on SmackDown Live. You know, your thoughts heading into No Mercy, just exactly how this triple threat is going to unfold.
Well, for me, I thought AJ was going to come out on top anyway, regardless. I knew Cena was going to be involved in some form, and it proved itself right. He was going to be at ringside. To me, I get that storyline of why you would do it, but at this point, maybe I'm trying to be a smart mark here, but it makes no sense. Why would John Cena want to sit at ringside to what? Watch both of these guys? He's been in the ring with both guys. He knows what they bring to the table. What reason does he have to be there to scout for what? He's there because he's going to interfere in the match and cause Dean Ambrose a shot at the title and is going to create more animosity. Where I really see this going right now, Jeff, and we'll find out by next week in the Go Home show, the feelings to me is that AJ will actually retain his title and it will be Dean Ambrose and John Cena competing now in a rivalry of their own, because it's really getting heat between the two of them. And believe it or not, it's kind of hard to believe that the champion, the WWE World Champion, is the odd man out in this rivalry right now, because although they both have a personal gripe against AJ, AJ is not part of this heated altercation between Dean Ambrose and John Cena.
Yeah, and then you think that John Cena is going to take some time off eventually, and then we hear that Dean Ambrose is going to take time off too because he's going to film another WWE straight to DVD movie. So,
He's being a part timer. What are you talking about? That's what part timers do. Are you kidding me?
So we wonder who AJ Styles' next opponent will be. Yeah, I totally agree with you. At No Mercy, he'll walk away the champion again, as he should. Because there's no way he should be just a one pay-per-view champion. You know what I mean? AJ Styles is building towards being truly the main guy on actually both shows, if you ask
me. And it's something different, Jeff, to the fact that whoever AJ works with, and then as the weeks go by and the pay-per-views go by, we'll start wondering, when's he going to drop the title? Or is this the event where he's actually going to lose the strap? To me, I could see AJ holding on to this till the Royal Rumble, even preferably WrestleMania, because it's just that much more believable because whoever he works with is great. And then what better payoff than to actually drop the title at WrestleMania. I think AJ can carry it till then, at that point. What a great honor for AJ to be headlining WrestleMania as champion.
Yeah, I mean, No Mercy is right around the corner, so we'll definitely talk some No Mercy in the next episode. But right now, Brian, kudos to you with getting Brian Fritz. And so that's where we'll turn to now. We'll do some Clash of Champions. We'll talk to Brian Fritz. You can follow him on Twitter at Brian Fritz. He's also host of Between the Ropes Wrestling Podcast. You can follow him on Twitter there at Between the Ropes. And then, of course, he's also a contributor for Sporting News. And you can follow him on Twitter, too, there at Sporting News. So we talked about Clash of Champions, and we asked him first and foremost just what his thoughts were of that pay-per-view.
Brian, thanks so much for coming on the High Spot Podcast. How are you, man?
Good. Appreciate you guys having me.
Hey, so listen, we're doing a little Clash of Champions recap, and had a lot of expectations to live up to, especially after SmackDown had Backlash. So I just want to get your take on, just real quick, how do you think it fared?
I thought it was a good show, but it wasn't a great show, and I think it was lacking a bit of emotion from the audience there in the arena and from everybody else watching. It just felt like it was one of these shows where, yeah, there was some good wrestling, but the stakes weren't there. And that's something I think that's been missing from Raw lately, especially during the split, is you don't feel like there's a lot of stakes on the line all the time. It just feels like a lot of things are thrown in. Raw really feels like the show that, hey, we can get away with having these incredible, great matches with the talent that we have here, but it doesn't feel like there are real stakes on the line. Like there's something that people are striving for other than the world championship. It's funny because over on SmackDown, it's a little bit different where they are trying to tell a lot more stories, and there is something with the storylines of the characters a little bit more. And I feel like that's lacking from Raw, and I thought that was the case when it came to Clash.
Brian, do you think what I've had trouble in is ever since the brand split, SummerSlam aside, with Backlash and now Clash of Champions, there is that something missing. It feels just like an extended version of Raw as before. It felt like a bigger event. You think the sole reason is because of the storylines and just, not putting emphasis on anything more than the world title and the universal title?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I just think within Raw, they already have a challenge of filling up 3 hours. But, outside of, doing storylines for the world championship, which you definitely should do. That's a reason why you have that. Outside of that, it's, there's not much substance to everything else, I feel. And plus, there's the whole question of, are guys baby faces or heels? And, even if they are supposed to be a baby face, how strong are they right now? Are they really getting people to care about guys when it comes to their personality and who they are other than just these great wrestlers? I mean, look at Kevin Owens. I mean, he's supposed to be a heel, but people get behind him. There's the argument about Roman Reigns that's been going on forever, and some people have even gotten behind Rusev now. People are wondering about Seth Rollins and exactly what his role is. Is he really a babyface? Is he a heel? And I know that WWE and even some of the talent will tell you, we're in a different phase of wrestling where that doesn't have to matter as much, that all we care about is getting a reaction. But I think in many cases, it's tough to get a reaction from guys if they're not spotlighted in the storyline, if there isn't a reason to get people to really care about them. And it's one thing to have great matches, which I think we all enjoy, but especially in WWE, there needs to be something more to it. And that comes in the characters and the stories.
I couldn't agree with you more there, Brian, because I remember listening to your last podcast you had, Between the Ropes. You were talking about the very same thing about storylines being so integral to the point where, you know, I always take the quote from Paul Heyman, where he's done countless interviews, and you've obviously had the, you know, the honor of interviewing Paul Heyman, where it's the old adage, like, these two are wrestling, man or woman. Why are they fighting and why should be invested to do it? It seems like that's really been lost. I mean, you talked about Roman Reigns, and to me, it's like, I understand that we live in a different age right now where it's not necessarily all black and white. There's shades of gray. But how much of a pressure is it on creative right now with the roster that Raw has compared to SmackDown? Because SmackDown isn't that deep. Is it, for example, for like a guy, Roman Reigns, is it essential for him to be taken out of the main event picture when they've kind of put him in and taken him out? Does that confuse the audience to an extent and at that same token give them resentment towards a guy like Roman Reigns?
I don't know if it really confuses them necessarily. I think it was something that was a necessary evil at this point when it came to Reigns. But I mean, we've seen this with other guys where they've been main event talent and they've been moved out of that role. And I think what they're trying to do with Roman right now is kind of emulate John Cena from a standpoint of, okay, so John is a main eventer, and then they pulled him back, and while still a huge star all of last year or most of the year, he was the United States champion. And even since then, up until just recently, you know, he hasn't necessarily been in that top, you know, tier storyline. He's been just a step below it, and that's been done on purpose. And I think that's what they want to do with Reigns, is they're trying to rebuild him right now. And they want to do it by having him be the United States champion and work his way back up. And I mean, I think by the time WrestleMania is here, he is going to be, you know, in the world title picture again. And he's going to be right there at the top of the card.
Obviously, it's clear that when he came back after serving his suspension, the 30 days, that they could have gone with turning him into a heel. And it really would have made sense. And all the stars aligned for that. Do you think that WWE is very persistent, very, very focused on making him, building him up as a top face? Do you think that's also another thing that causes resentment in the fans? Because obviously the way to go here would be obviously to be a monster heel, especially with Seth now looking to take the role of the babyface. Do you think that that's part of the resentment with the fans towards Roman Reigns? Or maybe it's not even his fault. It's just their frustration with WWE, but they lash it out on Roman Reigns?
Yeah, I don't even think it's Roman's fault. I think it's one of these cases of
it is a his guy. Fault. Stop it.
I mean, it's,
stop protecting,
I mean,
Roman Reigns, Brian.
Well, the guy is guilty of nothing, really. I mean, I think it's just a case of, well, a couple of things. Number one, you got pushed down everybody's throats, which if you're the talent, what are you going to do? Turn that down? I mean, you're trying to make the best of an opportunity that they're giving you. But there comes at a price sometimes with the fans. And if they think it's too much too quick, they'll let you know. The other thing is, and the biggest sin that he is guilty of is not being Daniel Bryan. And you go back to when was that, you know, 2 years ago, and he wasn't the guy that won the Rumble. And or Roman won the Rumble, Daniel Bryan wasn't. And Roman got to be in the main event of WrestleMania, Daniel Bryan didn't. And, you know, people resented him for it. I mean, to no fault of his own. Like I said before, what's he supposed to do? Say, you know what, Daniel? I know the people want you a little bit more, so I'm going to step aside from being in the main event of WrestleMania, and I'm going to go to the powers that be and say, you know what? Let's put Daniel Bryan there. I mean, he's an employee, and he's doing what's being told. I think when it comes to him as a performer, yes, I think he could be better on the mic. I don't think he's that great with scripts. But I think he's gotten better, and I think they've done a better job of limiting him on the mic, which has, you know, been a lot better. But the guy has charisma, and I think when it comes to his matches, I still think he's really good. And a lot of the talent will tell you that. I think that he's definitely gotten better over the last year and a half. But, you know, when people get set in their ways about a particular person and they don't like them, they're going to stay on that, and that's what they've done with Roman.
Yeah, I mean, guys, you have had like guys like AJ Styles and Chris Jericho mention how good it is, you know, how good he is in the ring. So obviously, again, I think it's more like towards resentment towards the fans. But here's something that bothers me too: as we get to Clash of Champions and the card and getting into that. Now we saw the New Day go up against Gallows and Anderson, and I've been. This
Jeff
been like,
refuses to call in the club.
Well, no. But what I've been very upset about is just the way that Gallows and Anderson have been booked, because now it's to the point, especially on Raw too, it's just to the point where like they don't matter. You know what I mean? And that's very sad for me, because I had a lot of expectations for them coming in. So to see where they are now, to the point of like irrelevancy now, because to me, I think WWE dropped the ball on these guys. I mean, can they be salvaged? Because right now it's going to take a long time for me to take them seriously as a tag team now.
Yeah, I think anybody can be salvaged. But like you said, I mean, they've been damaged. And it's been interesting the way that WWE has used them, considering that, you know, it probably cost a decent chunk of money to get them. I mean, I'm not saying they had to break the bank to get them, but you had to convince them to come from New Japan. And those guys were ready to go. They were ready to live back at home, but they had to get a deal that they were happy with. And you're thinking, okay, they got convinced to come over from New Japan to sign with WWE, and you know they're in a hot act over there with Bullet Club, and you thought that they were going to do something off of that. And WWE really hasn't capitalized on that. I mean, even when it came to their debut, we kept waiting and waiting and waiting for it to happen. Now, that's on WWE's timeline of when they had something creatively for them, but it just felt like there was some missed opportunities, that they got them in there a little bit late. And even when they did, once they've seen them, you know, on their platform, they haven't liked what they've seen, apparently, and they have not pulled the trigger with them. And I mean, how many times do we have to see them face New Day? And you have to think that after the match on Monday, that's it, you know, that feud is over. Hopefully it's over at this point. And I don't know where you go with those guys right now. Who do they pair them up with next? But it's disappointing to see that you went through all the steps to get them, and I don't think they've really been themselves. That comedy or lack of comedy act that they did a couple of weeks ago that really killed them, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And
yeah, you can't give them the titles after that skit. That's the problem.
That was death right there, man. I mean, it's amazing that the new day are almost bulletproof at this point.
I like that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, just being hokey and goofy and doing their kind of act, but Anderson and Gallows are not. And you know, people still don't even really know them. I mean, we know them as big time wrestling fans, and we've seen them over in Japan. But there's a lot of people that watch WWE that didn't know who these guys were, and still don't know who they guys are. And they're not the same personas that they were over in New Japan.
Yeah, it kind of bothers me, because it could have been. I'm not saying I'm the smartest guy in the world, although I like to think so. But
oh, believe me, he tells me a million times.
Yeah, he's the smartest. Just go with that, man. It's okay.
that's my gimmick. That's my gimmick.
We're all smart bookers here. Yeah.
It could have been easily, like, you know, the worst thing they did was they wrestled on Raw when they made their debut. Should have been something special. Should have been on a pay per view. And also, too, man, if they could have just had like a sit down with Cole. They never had that sit down with Cole where they, you know, they do that 5 minutes thing and they speak with Michael Cole and they get a background. We don't know. We know they're from, you know, New Japan. But we don't know the whole story and why they were here. You know, it would have been so easy just to do something like that. But, you know, my opinion, and I don't know how Brian and you feel about this, is I think they're still making money off the New Day. That's what I think.
Yeah, I mean, they still like the New Day. I think Vince loves it because you've got three guys out there that are more than just a wrestling act. They're an entertainment act. But I think the thing that we have to worry about, and this happened, those guys are extremely talented. But you wonder, where exactly are you going with these guys? And are you going to overuse them? Because we've seen that a little bit, where there's been too much of that show where they've had the New Day all over it, and you have to be very careful in how you use them.
Yeah, definitely get oversaturated at times. But, you know, speaking of a missed opportunity with Gallows and Anderson and the Bullet Club, which, you know, who knows? Maybe it's still salvageable. We don't know yet, but the way it's going right now, it doesn't seem like it. The Cruiserweight Classic, I thought, was a huge success. And now the Cruiserweight division is exclusive to Raw. And at the Clash of Champions, we had the very first, well, not the first ever, but in a while, we've had the Cruiserweight title now part of the WWE, with TJ Perkins defeating Brian Kendrick. I know a lot of people complained of where Brian Kendrick should have been in that position. I had no problem with it theoretically, but my main question to you, Brian, is looking at the Cruiserweight division now being on Raw, which I preferably prefer to be on SmackDown, just because I feel like SmackDown is, even though it's a 2-hour show, it's more solid and probably could protect them and make them showcase them more theoretically. I know Raw is the A brand, supposedly, right? But with the cruiserweight division, are you fearful or concerned? Because I'm to the point where I always feel that you got something good going right now, and the way the WWE has been as of late, they don't seem to really be handling things like that and giving it the proper, you know, coverage it needs to have.
There's like no trust.
Yeah, there's no trust there. Are you worried about the cruiserweight division being used properly on the Raw brand or even with the WWE?
Oh, yeah, I worry about it. So far, I don't think it's been bad. I think the biggest thing that they have to be careful of is just, you know, introducing their audience to this talent. Because once again, it's one of these things where we follow it closely. We see it on social media as well. We watch everything. So we know who these guys are. We even knew who they were before they got to WWE. But, I mean, we account for, what, a quarter of the WWE audience? If that, that's probably even too much. So there's a lot of people that still don't know who these guys are. And it goes back to, yeah, they could be phenomenal wrestlers and they could go out there and they could do their thing. But if you don't know who they are and you don't see the personality, then are really people going to be invested? I mean, look at what they did on Monday night. I mean, you've got TJ Perkins and Tony Nese. They had a really good match. But people don't really know either guy, especially Nese. So, you know, we're starting to get to know them a little bit better. I mean, I will say this. I think people are quickly warming up to Rich Swann, but a lot of that is because of his music and his dancing.
I
love seeing Rich Swann. My friends make fun of me because I go to a lot of the NXT tapings.
You were busting a move at TakeOver, and I swore we saw you somewhere like during TakeOver in Dallas. You were...
You probably did see me. But, you know, it's little
day.
Things like, yeah, you know, you go into these characters and people get into it. And I at least they have not, like, mixed the cruiserweights with, like, a heavyweight. Like, they haven't had Braun Strowman come in the middle of a match and just devour everybody. So
I'll give them that. That's Jeff's biggest fear, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and hopefully they don't go that route. I mean, they can definitely add some more people to it. I mean, maybe Neville is going to be a part of that. And there's some other guys they can use. So, you know, we'll see exactly what direction they go with that. But, you know, they've got to get a few more guys, I think, on there and keep them separated. I like that the way that they kind of sparsed it out on Raw from a standpoint that they had two cruiserweight matches. One was a tag team, one was a singles match. You're getting to know the guys a little bit better. And hopefully that's the route that they keep them on. And you know, keep the cruiserweights to themselves right now and just let people get to know the talent there. And if you want to bring in a couple other cruiserweights, that'd be great.
Speaking of keeping the cruiserweights to themselves, Brian, do you think by labeling them cruiserweights, you've put like a ceiling on them theoretically? Because back in the WCW days, when you were labeled theoretically a cruiserweight, there's no ever, and I know things were run differently in WCW, but there's never ever a belief that, you know, Rey Mysterio Jr. could be the world champion, or an Eddie Guerrero or Chris Jericho at that time, who were considered cruiserweights, could be the world champion and could sell out tickets. Does that put a ceiling on them and a plateau?
It might, because that's something that I've always worried about. And I wasn't too fond of the name cruiserweight, because there's going to be an opportunity for guys like the ones you mentioned and others potentially to where if they become a big enough star, you probably want to break them out of the cruiserweight division. But then
they're always going to be labeled cruiserweight.
Right. Is it going to look bad because they were a cruiserweight? They're a smaller guy. Yeah, they're a smaller guy. But you know what? We're in the era of a smaller guy. We're in the era of a work rate. Even in WWE, as crazy as that is, there's still going to be bigger guys there. But there's opportunities for smaller guys like we've never seen before. So, yeah, that's something that I was wondering about as well, that I've never really been too fond of the cruiserweight, you know, name. But I don't know what else you call them, because are you're not going to say X Division, obviously, or whatever.
But that was such a cool concept, though, when they said X Division, no limits, theoretically. It was just another division, but it wasn't necessarily based on weight.
Right. It was based on style. But, yeah. you know, with a style, I mean, you can use that kind of style no matter who you're facing. It doesn't matter if it's somebody else that's the same size or wrestles the same style or against bigger guys. So, you know, there's give and take either way that you use those guys and what kind of label you put on them.
You know, I like this conversation. We're talking about the Clash of Champions here with or a little recap with Brian Fritz here.
Brian Fritz
from behind.
That gimmick's already taken, man. I can't go with gimmick infringement on that.
Well, we can't. So, from Between the Ropes podcast host and from the Sporting News.
Come on, everybody steals gimmicks now and then, Brian.
Exactly.
Man, I don't want Brian Kendrick coming at me.
The cruiserweights, real quick, last, we're closing on the cruiserweights. I have no problem with TJ Perkins. He is amazing. But do you think once Sabre Jr. and Ibushi were not going to sign, it was kind of weird that it was actually Gran Metalik and TJ Perkins in the finals? Or do you think that didn't hurt the finals at all?
I don't think it hurt it too much, and I was a little bit worried about that, you know, being there live from a standpoint of what was the crowd going to do.
There's Brian bragging again. He was there live. Yes, we get it.
I was there live.
Nice.
Yes.
We get it.
Well, he's in Orlando, though.
By the way, did I tell you that I go to the NXT tapings, too?
Oh. Yeah.
Man. But
this guy.
But, yeah, I was wondering about that, too, from a standpoint that the crowd was definitely rooting against Perkins. And then when he won the match against Ibushi, I was like, uh-oh, here we go. But then they warmed up to him pretty quickly against Gran Metalik. And the good thing is they had a really good match. And it made sense because you're talking about two guys that are under contract. And, I mean, Zack Sabre Jr. and Ibushi knew what they were getting into. I think if either of them had signed, especially when it came to Ibushi, they would have won. And I was even wondering if they were going to let him win regardless. But, you know, they said, hey, you haven't signed. We're not going to go that route. And, you know, Perkins was the right choice. The thing about Perkins in the tournament, too, was they had been telling that story about him, a guy that, you know, had a passion for wrestling, began when he was 14, used to skip school on Fridays, and he would go south of the border so he could go wrestle with a mask on, and he loved wrestling that much. And he was the youngest guy to ever go to New Japan Pro Wrestling. You know, he was only 18 years and 1 month old. As soon as he could get his visa, he was over there. And this is a guy that, you know, through his travels in the wrestling business, had been everywhere. He went for broke one time, you know, lost everything he had. He was homeless for a little while. And it's kind of this rags to riches story that now he's made it to, you know, the dream location, that being a WWE. And then he goes on and wins the Cruiserweight Championship and wins that tournament. And now he's on Raw.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't have picked a better Cinderella story than that. I mean, when I heard the story too, part of me got a little emotional, choked up. I was like, yeah, well, you know, if it couldn't have been Ibushi or Sabre Jr., like, I'm happy that it was TJ Perkins that got the strap, and his story is definitely one to look up to if you're aspiring to be not only a wrestler but overcome adversity. And we'll see how the WWE does in promoting him as their champion and their face of their division. But when it comes to, you know, people who theoretically say, quote unquote, oh, they're the face, you know, AJ Styles goes to the whole face that runs the place and who's, you know, the main guy. Nothing but frustration comes on my part because we always complain about talents being underutilized, right? To me, there's nobody right now more underutilized than Cesaro. I don't know if you guys agree with me or not, but right now with the whole Best of Seven series, and we've seen that before in the past, I remember the days in WCW watching Chris Benoit and Booker T going at it for the television title. Was it a success, the Best of Seven series? Was this the best way they could do it where they could protect both Sheamus and Cesaro?
Well, there's the question. Did you really need to protect both? Because while both are extremely talented, did you really need to protect Sheamus, or could you use him as a springboard for Cesaro and finally get him into a main event picture, like so many people have thought about? And I don't think it's necessarily going to hurt Sheamus. You know, I mean, you're talking about a guy that's, you know, been a former world champion on several occasions. Mm-hmm. And people make the argument, like, should he really be back in a main event picture? It's Cesaro's time. He's a younger talent when it comes to WWE. He's a guy that's on the rise. And as much as people still talk about it and talent talks about it and how badly they want to see Cesaro be used in a main event picture, there's obviously at least one person in WWE that doesn't see it that way yet.
Yeah, the guy that says you got to grab that imaginary brass ring all the time.
Right, you know, and so, I mean, as much as we thought that the Best of Seven was going to be used as, you know, a platform for Cesaro to go on to bigger and better things, instead, it turned out to just be, all right, so we had seven matches and the final match didn't have a finish. So now we're going to put them together as a tag team. And everybody's kind of like, what? So, you know, what exactly did it accomplish? Now, maybe they'll go on, they'll be tag team champions or something, but it was nowhere near what anybody expected.
Yeah, and of course, too, for me, the whole Best of Seven series, which I thought was originally what you had mentioned, was going to be a springboard for Cesaro. It was going to showcase Cesaro, wow, this guy's a main event caliber type of athlete because he can pull out seven straight matches. I kind of figured they were going to do the whole down 3-0 and coming back and winning. So it surprised me it went to a draw. I thought they were going to have a match on Raw. But then when Mick Foley came out and announced what you had mentioned, they were going to be a tag team, I'm scratching my head like, what was the point of
which
all
translation,
that?
Brian, meant, you know what? We have nothing for you in the main event scene. Yeah. We don't have plans for you, so we're going to put you in a tag team in this depleted division.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the same thing that I thought. They're like, nope, we're not ready to pull the trigger on you yet. So this is what we're going to do with you. And, you know, I know you can't undo this right now. And I don't know if they can anytime within the next year or two, theoretically. But this will go back to the argument that I've always had of, did you really need to do a brand extension? Because I understand that you've got a lot of talent and you want to have some kind of differential between Raw and SmackDown. And the whole goal of this was to try to build up the ratings on SmackDown. So you wanted to make it different. You wanted to make it unique. And you're doing that with the talent that you have on there that are exclusive to that brand. But I will always make the argument that you could have accomplished something very similar without having to do the brand extension, because what this has done now, it's limited different directions that you can go when it comes to talent. If somebody had an idea for a storyline that you wanted to pit two guys against one another, you can't do that now necessarily because it could be on different brands. I think it takes away from a little bit of the armchair quarterback and kind of the dream booking that fans do. Not just, you know, us that follow it closely, but everybody, you know, people like to do that. They always wonder, what if we could have this, we could have that. And now you don't really have that because there's been, you know, this limit on it because guys are on different brands. And I still think they could have done that. When it comes to, you don't have to necessarily say one guy's only on Raw and one guy's on a SmackDown, but I think there's a way to split up the talent from a standpoint that, hey, one week a guy's going to appear on SmackDown, maybe the following week he appears on Raw, maybe one week he appears on both because it's the go-home show for a pay-per-view. You've got enough talent where you can do that. And I think you can come up with storylines that make that work fantastically well. Plus, you know, if you got one world championship, you've got one tag team championship, you got one of everything when it comes to the championships, and that's going to make them more important. You're going to integrate this cruiserweight division. That's going to help. I think they could have done it without the brand extension. And all we've done now out of that is when you look at Raw and SmackDown, you've depleted the rosters, the depth of it when it comes to potential matchups that you can have. And you've added a pay-per-view per month to what I'll tell you what, my head's spinning. I almost forgot that Clash of Champions was on Sunday. I mean, I had this revelation just before 8 o'clock going, damn, Clash is on tonight. Are you kidding me?
And then 2 weeks, no mercy. It's like,
right. You know, so now it's like every 2 weeks there's a pay-per-view. And it's just like, man, this is just so damn much. I can't keep up with it.
Well, not only can't keep up with it, but the main fact, like we were talking about Backlash and how Jeff and I could relate more to Backlash, because to me, the storylines integrating into the main event, the main card, to me, I understood or I was somewhat invested in. With Clash of Champions, it really seems like for the most part, besides the main event title matches, everything was just kind of made last minute and we're like, okay, well, you know, these two are going to rehash an old rivalry and we'll just put these groups together and really just space filling. So I really lost the connection and the commitment to it. But, you know, I was about to just say, Jeff, you know, Brian should just do a CM Punk, and he just did a pipe bomb, just dropped the mic, and you can't say it any better than that, theoretically, because, you know, when I look at right now, for example, let's look at the women's division, the women's revolution, it's been huge, we've watched that on the network on 24, right, W24, in this situation here, for how many countless months and years have we been wondering, when is Bayley coming up? She finally does, but in my opinion, it could have come at a worse moment right now, because from the conclusion of SummerSlam, what happened to Sasha Banks dropping the title Charlotte, whether that was pre-planned or not, and she was dealing with injuries. Now, Bayley's in a very difficult predicament right now because should the focus be on Sasha and Charlotte, and Charlotte having a dominant performance at Clash of Champions? Where do you see this whole coming to a conclusion, theoretically, in the women's division? Because not only do you have those three to worry about, but now you can definitely tell they're pushing Nia Jax, and when Nia Jax gets involved in the W Championship, Women's Championship, I mean, what are you going to do then?
I think it's going to build to Sasha eventually winning the championship back, but I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. I mean, I can't imagine them doing it on Raw next week, that she wins the title for a second time and on Raw a second time. So I think that they eventually want to get to that point where Sasha wins the championship back. And I don't know if that's going to be at the Royal Rumble or can they drag it out to WrestleMania, but I think that Sasha would win it and then they move on to a program potentially with Nia Jax.
Is Bayley the odd person out in this?
I don't even know why they included. I guess maybe because they're afraid that Sasha was hurt, and they put Bayley in a triple threat, and which we have a lot of issues with triple threat matches too, by the way. Oh, yeah. But you know, another thing too that I really have to ask you too is, especially with Sasha Banks getting injured before at SummerSlam. Obviously, I don't know how you would rate the match at Clash of Champions. To me, it was so. You can tell that they're trying. way too hard. They need to justify this every single time they go on stage. And
Is the pressure getting to them, you think?
I don't know. You know, I think that they do feel a lot of pressure, that they're always trying to have, you know, the best matches that they can, but they want to stand out, you know, above everybody else. And I think they're still, to some extent, probably still want to prove themselves, and they want to have the kind of matches that they had in NXT. And they put a lot of pressure on themselves regardless, because everything that they did out in NXT was fantastic. And, you know, you're trying to get back to that point. And I don't know if they need to worry about that. I would just say, just go out there and do your thing. You've done it before. Yeah, you can do it again, you know, so try not to put too much pressure on yourself. But, that's easier said than done. Probably.
Yeah, at SummerSlam, they went all out, you know, and they really almost, you know, risked Sasha's life there, you know,
in
a couple of spots, you know, and a little similar too at Clash. To me, it just seems like they are trying to validate where they don't have to, you know. They're there. They're in that spot. They've earned it for you know, it's been months. And, you know, I don't think they need to do all that. But heading into something, to me, that a guy that's validated himself as the Universal Champion, that's Kevin Owens.
I still can't get used to that word.
The longest reigning Universal Champion of all time. listen, I love the guy. To me, for the long time, he's been the best heel, been the best guy on the mic as a heel. And to me, he had a great match with Seth Rollins. Your thoughts on the match?
I thought it was a really good match. I was curious how they were going to get out of it at the end. And we found out, you know, it was, you know, Stephanie getting involved, and kind of now they're slowly but surely showing that, you know, she's been lying all along,
what,
and she's in cahoots with her husband, you know, because, I mean, I don't know how many times, you know, we see this problem where, you know, she's trying to get an answer from her husband, but she just can't get it, even though they live together, they're married, they have kids together. So we just don't have time of the week to talk about, you know, why did he do that? Why would he do that against Seth Rollins?
They're just so busy, Brian. They're just so busy, they can't communicate that.
Hey, now that we're in the limo, could you just tell me why, Kevin Owens?
Yeah. I was joking around. I go, you know, you turn to each other at night like, good night, honey, good night, good night. Oh, by the way, why'd you screw over Seth Rollins?
He's already snoring.
Yeah.
Not telling you, honey, you got a headache. I gotta tell you, baby.
I mean, Kevin has been great. I mean, the question about Kevin is, you know, as much as he can act like a heel, people love him because he is so good at what he does. So I think the tricky thing is going to be, can you really keep him a heel? And I really don't think they care. But what they really should care about is, when does the moment come that he has a true turn? Because this is a guy that, if you do it right, you know, could be a monster babyface. I mean, not to the level of a Steve Austin, but he can be that kind of Steve Austin figure from a standpoint that he's kind of the guy of the people.
Well, yeah, he could be like a Mick Foley because he's lovable. You know, he's got kind of got that look, you know, the
regular
guy.
Oh, you're just saying
guy.
That because you dressed up as him for Halloween, Jeff.
Yeah,
I did it.
No.
Stop it.
But you know the best part, though, about him is like...
Wait, you dressed up as Kevin Owens for Halloween?
Yeah, I did for Halloween, yeah. It's so simple, dude.
I was going to say, what an extensive outfit that must have been.
Oh, I'm telling you, man. I broke the bank of, like, you know, $20. And I was Kevin Owens, you know. But here's the thing. Kevin Owens yesterday got on the mic on the highlight reel with his best friend, Chris Jericho. And he really went to task on Seth Rollins. Really got personal with the whole Dangerous thing. To me, that was great. I mean, they need more personal stuff because on SmackDown, they're getting personal. Cena and Ambrose, Miz and Daniel Bryan. You know, I like that. I really like that they add the reality, how they mentioned Finn, how they mentioned John Cena and Sting. I like that. It really made Kevin Owens, you know, look like a monster heel. And he's winning in a heel fashion way, which is, to me, how you do it.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and you know what? They get people talking as well. I mean, I know some people say, well, that's a dangerous line, especially if you're including Daniel Bryan, because then it's making people wonder, like, oh, is he going to come back? And if he doesn't come back, then people obviously are going to be disappointed. But they're doing storylines that are getting people to talk, and they're getting you to care about people. Whether or not you care about Dolph Ziggler, and she's, you know, a wonderfully talented performer, but he's been around for a long time, and there's been all these different starts and stops. But, you know, the unthinkable is happening right now on SmackDown. People actually care again about The Miz. I mean, they hate him, but they should hate him. And he's become a central figure of that brand, and he's doing a great job in being a heel. And he stands out because he really is a heel. He's a guy that acts like a heel and he gets booed and he delivers on those things. So that stands out a lot. You know, I think AJ Styles is acting like a heel. People want to cheer him to some extent, but not as much as Kevin Owens, but he's doing his thing. You know, so they're getting people talking when it comes to some of these storylines. And I like that they peel back the layer a little bit. It's funny because I typically don't watch like the pre-shows or the post-game shows for Raw or SmackDown or pay-per-view. But ever since they started doing Talking Smack,
yes.
I almost feel like that's must-see programming now.
I completely agree. Ever since Miz cut that promo on Daniel Bryan, everybody had been talking about it. Now it seems like everybody's tuning in now to see what might happen. If somebody's going to go off script, especially Dean Ambrose when he was talking about John Cena and basically...
That was cool. That was a good promo.
That was cool.
Yeah, you know, it's only a 30-minute show. You know, it's entertaining. You got Daniel Bryan on there, you know, joking around a little bit and doing his thing. And then you get a couple other talents on there to advance storylines. And sometimes they're just really talking about themselves. You know, it's not as much in character. But at the same time, part of it is. So it's this interesting little balance that they do that I like.
You know who I really think did a great job as far as on that Talking Smack, and I think is going to be is underrated and will eventually be a central figure on SmackDown? That's Alexa Bliss. I think she's done a great job, and she is the most heelish out of anyone in that division. What do you think?
I like her a lot. You know, it's funny because I think a lot of people, including myself, are wondering where exactly is she going in her career when she was with Blake and Murphy. And when she got separated from them and she just started working singles, she went to another level. I mean, you could tell that she improved vastly and she kind of found herself as a character as well. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why I think she got called up already because, you know, obviously she's very attractive. She's very athletic, but she found herself as a character and she improved as a wrestler. So there was a reason why they brought her up. And I think she's done tremendously well.
Definitely. She has a very unique look to her as well. I mean, when she first originally came in, she came in as the bubbly personality. Now she's really the in-your-face mark. And again, she's not so bad on the eyes either, Jeff, from what I've noticed from Alexa Bliss. But something I want to talk to you, since we were talking about Alexa Bliss and she came up through the NXT program.
Did I tell you that, you know, I go to NXT shows and I've actually
yes,
met Alexa Bliss before?
And you know what? No, I didn't realize that, because the thing that I wanted to ask you is, now you've said it, you've been at the NXT tapings before. And so my question to you is, now with the whole Shinsuke Nakamura, I mentioned it to Jeff too, and because it's a two-parter. One, isn't this a great time to be a fan right now? Because you have AJ Styles as the world champion. Kevin Owens is the universal champion. Still wish Finn Balor didn't get injured, though. And then you have Shinsuke Nakamura as NXT champion. Could be a better time to be a wrestling fan to have those three as your champions. But speaking of Shinsuke, though, in the rematch against Samoa Joe, do you think this is going to live up to the billing? They have a lot to live up to from what they did at NXT TakeOver Brooklyn. What do you think is the outcome, theoretically, of this?
Well, I think it'll live up to the billing because they're both professionals and they're both really good and they both care about it. So I think it will. Mm-hmm. As for what happens, that's the interesting thing, because both of them belong on the main roster.
Yes.
I mean, easily. And you can see either one of them going. I still believe that Nakamura between the two is the more likely to go. So I think we could see a situation where Joe wins the title back, and then, you know, he could say, hey, I'm the first two-time NXT champion, and Nakamura could go to the main roster. And I don't know if they would bring him up immediately. Maybe it would be a situation where he would debut at the Rumble. But I mean, both of those guys need to be up in the main roster very, very soon.
You know, again, did I catch right that you go to the NXT tapings?
I think he mentioned that.
I did.
Okay, yeah, okay. So, you know, NXT's in transition a little bit right now because a lot of guys have been called up with the draft. And you got guys that, Bobby Roode that are there. And I think, you know, he's a very glorious guy. They're in transition right now. How long do you think it'll take for this, I guess, like this, the new group to come up within NXT? Because the roster has been a little bit depleted, but you got people like Ember Moon, which I think she's very talented. You got tag teams like TM61, you know. Do you think it'll take a long time before NXT transitions? Because it's been a little bit of a lull the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think that's the part that they're trying to figure out right now. And the good thing for them is they're always signing other talent. So I don't know if there's going to be some other guys that they bring in here in the near future, because they could do that. I think where you can really see they're missing out on some talent, though, is in the women's division, because you mentioned,
yeah,
you know, Ember Moon. and you've got Asuka as the champion. But outside of that, that's a pretty thin division. I mean, they're trying to do some other stuff, but with some of the other women there, but it's going to take a little while. So I think while it is a transition period, that's exactly what NXT is for, though. I mean, I know that's its own brand. It's become a big thing, but, you know, NXT is still developmental. I mean, to me, Triple H won't use that word anymore, but I will. For the most part, it's developmental. And the people that, are beyond that phase of their career, you were talking about a Bobby Roode, you're talking about Samoa Joe, you're talking about Nakamura. Those are Aries, guys that should be on the main roster. Yeah. Aries. You know,
Eric
and
Young.
You know what? There's going to be a situation where some of those guys, they know their role. They signed up to stay in NXT. You know, that doesn't mean it's impossible for them to go to the main roster, but they probably signed thinking, this is where I'm going to be for the next 5 years of my career. And if that's the case, then that's fine. I mean, we could see them on the main roster, but for the most part, NXT is still supposed to be for developmental and, you know, trying to make stars that will eventually go up to the main roster. So I think right now it is a little bit of a transition period. And I think we're going to have to see what other talents that they add here in the near future.
Oh, we're talking to Brian Fritz here you cover a huge basis of things in professional wrestling, which I've always followed and really appreciate you giving us a few minutes of your time here. So a few more before we let you go, though, Brian, and thank you for the time. You're talking about, you know, transition periods with NXT. We're talking about how the WWE is trying to split themselves and literally create competition within themselves because there's really no other competition out there to compete with them. So that being said, with the current rumors we've been listening to about how possibly, you know, TNA is putting in a bid to purchase TNA.
No, WWE is putting
the WWE's been putting, yeah, an offer.
TNA would like to buy TNA, but they don't have the funds.
The funds, exactly. But exactly, they don't have the funds.
I don't have the money to fund my own company.
Between the three of us, we probably could put in something, but what are the chances that WWE does purchase TNA and adds to the roster depth on to maybe NXT or SmackDown?
You know, I was wondering about that because that to me would be a very tricky proposition because, okay, say that WWE buys them, but buys only from Dixie Carter. She owns, we believe, around 70% of the company. I don't know what exactly she's in control of. Like, does she control the entire video library? What exactly does she own? What's her ownership stake entail? Because, I mean, if she does sell to WWE, then you would have to think that they're done. They're going to go bankrupt because WWE is not going to help them out. You know, they don't want them to be on NXT. If they go bankrupt, then WWE will pick up the scraps. And that would include the video library, which is the thing they would want the most. And then possibly some talent contracts. But even then, when it comes to those contracts, those contracts are not structured the way that WWE would want to have them. And they would have to work that out too. Because these deals that they have are, you know, they're different for different talents.
Yeah, because they can do independence as well as
some
TNA,
of the guys can.
Yeah,
some of them can, but TNA has to book them.
Yeah.
Like I know EC3 just signed that deal to where he can work indies, but TNA has to book him for it. And then you've got guys like Drew Galloway who do not have that deal, and he books himself outside of TNA, and he could do that for whatever he wants. So, you know, there's a lot of red tape to cut through if they're going to assign some talents. But I mean, there's a couple of guys I'm sure that they would be interested in. The other thing is too, say it's the Hardys that they're interested in. There's already been some rumors about, you know,
Matt,
Matt, and then Jeff has been very public, you know, with people in interviews saying, you know, I'd like to end my career in WWE, but neither of them wants to work a full-time schedule. And you would think that WWE would probably want them to do that. I don't know if they're going to give them the special deal that they've given some other talents to say, you only have to work a part-time schedule. So that's going to be another tricky thing that they would have to navigate to as well.
Tricky to the sense that, you know, WWE would, for example, theoretically maybe use them on NXT to help boost up that brand, because that's what they've been doing with guys like Austin Aries, Bobby Roode. I mean, these are established stars, and they're not young guys coming in through the system. So could you see a sense where they could, you know, purchase guys like that and use them for NXT to help bring up that brand even more and make more stars?
I think WWE would like to do that, but I'm sure that the talents that they would probably have the most interest in would be guys that have been at the top of TNA that probably feel like, I don't want to go to NXT. I want to go to the main roster. That's where I belong. And they can make that argument too now, saying, hey, you know what? Raw and SmackDown are not deep. You guys need more talent there. And that's what I provide. So, you know, while NXT is not bad, obviously, I think those guys would be like, I don't want to go there. you know, I'm a main roster guy, so that's where I want to be. I mean, maybe there are a couple guys that would want to do that, especially if they say, hey, you guys are going to be down here for like a year or two. And we all know how promises go. If somebody can make a promise, doesn't mean it's going to happen. But maybe there would be a couple of guys that would want to do that. But I'm sure there's going to be other guys that say, hey, if I have any interest in going there, it's got to be on the main roster or else I'm not going. And there's going to be some people, like maybe a Drew Galloway, that I would think, hey, I've been there. I enjoy what I'm doing right now. I like that I'm wrestling all over the world for these different promotions. And I can control my schedule. I can control my character. I can control my work rate. I don't want to go there right now.
Did you ever see a scenario where I was always thinking when I first initially heard the rumors that the WWE could purchase them? And if I was the WWE, I'd be like, okay, well, listen, we'll purchase you. We have the rights and everything like that. You guys go on and be your own separate entity as long as we're funding you, because that money is going to come directly back to me anyway. In that case, you still theoretically own it, and you could bring talent theoretically if you want to. Be like another developmental organization in a way.
Be like Double A.
Double A, exactly.
Well, yeah, I know, but I think they're business partners, you know. NBC Universal would not be too thrilled about that.
Yeah.
Saying, hey, you know what? You guys have, you know, another show on another network. That's not cool.
Or maybe make it a show on the WWE network, maybe, I guess, just add more program in there. But Brian,
yeah, that would be something that I could see because, they've already got NXT. So maybe they could, but I mean, there's a long way to go to that point. I mean, we're going to find out by the end of the week, probably by Friday, what's going on with TNA. And, you know, I mean, as sad as this could be, I mean, I don't want to see anything happen to TNA as a company because I want more places where guys can work.
Exactly.
But at the same time, Bound for Glory could be the final show that company ever has. Or maybe they won't even get to Bound for Glory, which would be just a nightmare scenario. You know, but I mean, something's got to happen here if they want to do Bound for Glory, if they want to have the TV tapings afterwards, and if they want to continue as a promotion.
Yeah, man. I mean, and the last thing you want to do is you want to see as many wrestlers perfect their craft before, of course, they all want to make it to the big show eventually, you know? So you want to see them hone their craft anywhere they can, Evolve, PWG, Ring of Honor, TNA, you know? And you don't want to see a place like that shut down. Brian, thank you so much. But before we head out, I just want to ask you one thing. Are you confident that this is the year for your Cubs?
I don't like to talk about it because I don't want to jinx anything. I feel confident, but at the same time, I don't have any expectations like, oh, I know they're going to win, or, you know, I'm not trying to get my hopes up too high because I don't want to get crushed. But at the same time, like, I'm watching them as we're doing this. Okay. Yeah. So
I've
watched as much Cubs action as I can right now. And I haven't felt this kind of excitement in a while. Last year I was excited, but there was no expectations considering how young they were. And I was even surprised that they got as far as they did. But this is the year that you really feel like they could do something. But I don't want to jinx anything. I don't try to say too much. And I just kind of gonna go along for the ride. And
Brian, the biggest question going into the postseason, because there's no doubt you guys are going to be in the postseason, but where in the rotation you put Chet Stetman in?
Chet Stetman, that's a very good question.
Or in the bullpen.
Do you go in the bullpen, or do you put him in the rotation for the playoffs?
I think bullpen. That's probably where they can use him the best.
And listen, word of advice.
I used to love that.
I love that last year when they were playing the Mets. Like, where's exactly. Chet Stetman?
Where's Chet Stetman pitching in the rotation?
Just some advice. Some advice. Don't, if you're going to go to Wrigley, don't buy tickets towards the foul line, especially third base side.
I've been to Wrigley plenty of times. I went earlier this year. It was funny because my wife and I went up there, and normally we go to Chicago. We go to one game, and she's cool with going to a game, but I convinced her somehow to go to two games. And I was just kind of guessing on where to get tickets because she doesn't like sitting out in the bleachers like I do. And I guessed right to where we were not behind a pole. And in fact, some of the tickets I got, we were like right next to the pole. We were like in that same row and we were on the first base side. But yeah, it was funny because when you look up for tickets, you can actually find some websites that will tell you like, don't buy in this section in these rows because you won't be able to see anything.
Oh no, but I'm saying that like, do people still take pictures where Bartman was? That's what I was trying to refer to.
Oh,
I was like, just don't
get the Bartman seat.
I don't want to be anywhere near that section. That's cursed.
I think that seat is always abandoned. I don't think anybody wants to sit on that spot.
I know. And you know, it's funny because I still have people that like poke fun at me about that. Like, hey, so you're bringing Borkman back, huh? You know, or whatever. I'm like, I don't want to talk about that, dude. I mean, it is what it is, you know, at this point. But yeah, I have people like just constantly picking on me about the Cubs and everything. And I'm just trying to shut out my friends, especially this time of the year. It's been picking up. And I'm like, just stay out of my life for a little while. And, you know, we'll talk in a few months.
Imagine if Theo wins up there. He'll be, oh, my God, Boston and Chicago. That
I think it's time for the curses to be done. Yeah. I think the curses are done.
Yeah, no more curses. Theo goes into the Hall of Fame.
Broken two curses if you can do it. Well, listen, man, good luck. If my team gets out of it, which they're still in it, which is the Metsies, if they're out of it, I wish your team good luck. You know what I mean?
Those horrible Mets.
Yeah, I see Cubs and Red Sox in the World Series, if you ask me.
I was at your stadium earlier this year.
Yeah, I had a good laugh
because I was sitting there watching the Braves beat them, and I was chuckling.
Well, wow. We just congratulated him on the Cubs. And yeah, I don't even care. I'm a Yankee fan. I got nothing to brag about, theoretically.
I'm congratulating him. He just tweaked me on the Mets.
Yeah, you damn right I did, because of what the Mets did last year, what they did in 69. Hey, man, I wasn't even born in 69, and I know
still
about that
before. Hey, man.
Well, you don't got Rowan Gardner in the bullpen to close games for you, right? So, hey, tough luck for the Cubs.
No black cats out there, okay?
Exactly. Hey, Brian, thank you so much, man. Hopefully we can do this again some other time.
Absolutely. Thanks again for having me.
And a special thanks goes out to Brian Fritz. Again, catch him on Twitter at Brian's Fritz. Pretty easy to remember there. Huge contributor for the Between the Ropes podcast that he does host, as well as a wrestling columnist for at Sporting News on Twitter as well. Jeff, it was just great to get another perspective on things. And what was more surprising is that, you know, he goes to NXT tapings.
He's a Cubs fan?
That too, but he goes to NXT tapings all the time.
And I extend the olive branch and congratulate his team and wish him luck on the Cubs, and he comes at me with a Mets taunt. So yeah, for Fitz.
Yeah, I mean, some scars run deep, Jeff.
We're going to meet in Orlando, and we're going to settle this, me and you.
Yes, that'll be the next time. Hopefully we'll see him. Hopefully earlier than that, we would love to have him back on. But again, just great talking to him. We could talk to him for hours and hours. Just has a great perspective on things. We touched on a lot of topics right there. But again, Brian made a great point too, that sometimes there's just now so much wrestling. Before, in the past, we never really said that a lot. There's so much out there right now, it's hard to keep up. So it's great to catch up with him and kind of hash out some ideas and some thought process we had on everything like that. But another thing I'm looking forward to, Jeff, is that, you know, we've talked about, you know, SmackDown and Raw having their first ever independent pay-per-views now in a long time since the brand split. A lot of firsts have happened, and now for the first time, a sport that I watch occasionally, I wouldn't say I'm a huge diehard of it.
You know more than I do.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say I'm a diehard of it. You know, for the longest time, the UFC and mixed martial arts have tried to get, you know, themselves in New York, but they've been banned the entire time because people have thought of it as an animalistic type of sport.
Yeah, it's not like especially boxing. Especially the commission, sports commission in New York actually thought it was. They had their own ideas. Like, they remember back in the day when there's no weight divisions and anything, you know, happened. But it's a lot different than it is now. So, of course, they had their press conference, Dana White there showcasing, strutting like a peacock because they're finally in New York.
Why wouldn't he?
UFC 205.
How long it took for him to do that?
UFC 205, especially after $4 billion in his pocket, a nice little hefty paycheck he got.
You'd be strutting your stuff, too, and you'd be showing your feathers like a peacock and flying as well.
So they go to MSG in November, and of course, headlined by Conor McGregor and Eddie Alvarez. Brian, listen, I'm the novice one. You tell me, is this a good card? What are the titles that are going to be on the line here? Is McGregor defending his title? Is he going for the title? To me, first of all, how's the card look? And, you know, can anybody beat Conor McGregor?
Well, to me, the card looks really good, and it looks good on paper. But again, Jeff, you know a lot can happen from this point on until November, although most people might think it's not that far away. I mean, look at UFC 200. It was built to be a huge card. What happened 3 days before John Jones tested positive for performance-enhancing drugs? That main event was scrapped and tried to be saved. It couldn't be saved. Had Brock Lesnar. You had all the titles, basically most of them on the line, and that card to me just fell through. UFC 200, as big as it's supposed to be, fell flat. So this one right now has the makings of being really, really good, maybe equivalent of what a 200 should have been.
Better than 200?
I think so, too. I mean, listen, you have three titles on the line. You have the light heavyweight title, which is at 155 pounds. You have the welterweight title, which is at 170. And then you have the women's strawweight title, which is at 115. I mean, three titles are very well known, and three champions, well, you know, depending on the welterweight champion, Robbie Lawler used to be the welterweight champion at 170. A lot of people know George St. Pierre was the longest, well, not the longest reign, but one of the most dominant 170-pound champions in the world. So a lot of people know that division. But, you know, Tyron Woodley would be defending against Stephen Thompson. The women's strawweight division, Joanna Wojciechek.
Is that really
that's her name? Joanna Jędrzejczyk.
Wow, yeah. Okay. I thought you were winging that. That's how it is. God bless you, Bri.
Yeah, that wasn't easy for me to say, but she's been a dominant champion ever since she won the title. She wasn't the first ever. She's the second only to have that title.
Against Karolina Kowalkiewicz.
Yes, Kowalkiewicz. Mm-hmm.
God bless me if I got that right. I'm so sorry for these girls. They kick my ass. So I apologize for butchering your names.
Yes, but again, you know, we don't admit to be the best people at pronouncing names. But again, she's also both are Polish women that have been very dominant in their division, but polar opposites. So that has a great dynamic because Joanna is more of the trash-talking type of person, while Karolina is very soft-spoken and sweet.
Oh, yeah, Joanna got right in her face, too.
Yeah, but again, the thing with Karolina, don't let those types of things fool you, Jeff. She's one tough chick. I hate the word to say chick, it might sound demeaning because of the whole, you know, women's movement stuff, but at the same time, she's one tough cookie, and she can handle her own.
But the best part is Misha Tate is on this card.
Yes, Misha Tate is on this card. She won't be fighting for a title, but she's on this card. Yeah. Yes.
She'll be there.
So hopefully maybe one win away maybe from getting a rematch. We thought there was going to be an immediate rematch, but after she lost to Amanda Nunes in dominating fashion at UFC 200, she needs this win against Raquel Pennington to be able to get another opportunity, theoretically, at the title. So that and before all that, being headlined by one of the most, you know, controversial guys who's even crossed over in the world of professional wrestling, Conor McGregor, will be going into another weight class to fight for a title. And if he's successful in this, because he is the 145-pound champion, which is the flyweight division, one division below the lightweight division, he'll be the first ever
champion in two divisions?
Yeah, fighter in UFC history to be a champion in two divisions. So that just leads to, you know, we talk about storylines. What better storyline is that?
Well, basically, the sport is him and Ronda Rousey.
Yeah, and Ronda Rousey doesn't seem to be coming back anytime soon. And then there are rumors that George St. Pierre has gone out there wanting to come back.
Oh, okay.
And we know George St. Pierre. You've known him for a while.
Yeah, but I don't know if he can still go, honestly. I don't know. It's been so long. I don't know.
But here's the thing. To me, George, I see what you're coming from here, Jeff, but here's the thing. Although he hasn't fought, unlike other fighters that basically just they train every 3 months for a fight and then they heal,
he trains all
the way around. He is the truest sense, him and Conor McGregor, in my opinion, but are the truest sense of mixed martial arts because they train all the time. They never take days off.
Yeah, it's fine to train, but what about being in game shape? What about being actually, you know, fighting somebody? You know what I mean? Somebody who's more quicker, younger. You know what I mean? You can't equal anything you do in training than what you do in the octagon, and he hasn't been in there, what, like 3 years or so?
Well, here's the thing. George St. Pierre has never been claimed to be the greatest athlete. He's never been claimed to be the most dominant striker, grappler, submission artist. The thing with George St. Pierre, though, which is still a possibility for him, he's been the best mentally here of putting a game plan together and taking away people's strengths and making them their weaknesses. So, you know, at this age and this stage in his life, yeah, I see he's been out of the octagon for about almost 2 years now. But at the same time, if we put any money on him, it would still be on him.
Well, I don't know. The longer you stay away, to me, the less I can think you have a chance to take on like these younger guys, these guys that have been fighting, you know, on a more constant basis. But also, too, the rumor about now, supposedly Dana White saying that Ronda Rousey is open to taking on Cyborg. And just quick thoughts on that before we wrap up. Could it ever happen? Will this thing happen?
I think it'll happen, but Jeff, it'll never happen at the weight class division of Ronda Rousey. It'll be a catch weight, basically. But again, to me, it loses its luster. It's a similar... people still pay money to watch this, but it'll be a similar situation of Pacquiao Mayweather, where you had the ability of making it really good, but at the same time, both sides were just too stubborn to want to do anything. Both had their reasons for it and valid reasons, but in this case, it kind of loses its luster. So, yes, will it happen? I think so. As do I think George St. Pierre will come back? Yes, I do. But again, that's more difference in terms of legal ramifications, because prior to him leaving and semi-retiring, he had a deal under an old contract with the UFC. Now the UFC is partners with Reebok with their gear. George St. Pierre is not under that contract. So now those are the only things that are legally keeping George St. Pierre from getting back in the octagon.
Well,
I think both of those things will happen in the near future.
Well, it should be interesting heading into November, UFC 205, headlined by McGregor and Eddie Alvarez. So that should be really exciting. So we're going to keep you up to date on everything that's going on, not only WWE, but also UFC and anything going around the world of sports. Also, to a little somber note, too, we'll end it here but next week we have Bazanji on. Finally, Bazanji. Really, really excited for talking to the man behind the music here on the Taz Show, and just a very talented hip hop artist, Bizanji, will join us next week. And a little somber note, guys, with the death of Arnold Palmer, with the death of Jose Fernandez, which really, you know,
struck a chord with you.
Struck a chord with me, especially. Listen, just advice here before we leave here on the High Spot Podcast: live every day like it's your last day. Take advantage of life. You never know, you know, when it's going to end. You're not guaranteed the next day. And also tell your loved ones that you love them, because again, too, you know, you never know. You just never know. You think you got the world on a string when you're in your 20s and your 30s, but it just is, nothing is guaranteed. And again, on a somber note here at the High Spot Podcast, our thoughts and prayers go out to the family of Arnold Palmer, and also to Jose Fernandez. Just very, very, very sad. Just a week in general on that point.
And two very impactful people in their respective sports that touch a lot of people, regardless of you know, the age difference between the two of them. Just very impactful. And like you said, I couldn't say better than what Jeff did. Basically, just enjoy your life for the precious moments you have, because it is very short. So for Jeff Martin, I am Brian Berger. We are the Jersey Wrecking Crew, and you guys have been listening to the High Spot Podcast. Catch us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast with all your news and comments, and guests will be posting up there as well. Also on Brain Stew Radio Network at Brain Stew Radio as well. So for all that being said, I will close it a little bit differently this time, Jeff. For everything that we've gone through this past week, all I want to say from the High Spot Podcast and the Jersey Wrecking Crew, all I want to say to you guys is love each other, and may God bless you all.
That's right.